listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You know, whether we like to admit it or not, we are all in school together. For years, I've been working with the idea that our Earth is a giant school to which we have all come in order to learn and grow and express ourselves. In this school, we learn through having experiences. And this means that literally everything can be seen as an opportunity for learning. Most such opportunities come through our relationships and interactions with other human beings. My guest today shows us another way we also have growth opportunities through the other creatures with which we share life. Michael Brown, author of The Presence Process, Alchemy of Intimacy, and now Cattails for Marietta, is with us to talk about this latest work, Cattails for Marietta. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. We welcome your questions and comments. We have chats on Blog Talk Radio on emotionalpro.com, and you can also call toll-free 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570 to talk directly with my guest, Michael Brown. South African Michael Brown has been on a self-directed journey to heal himself, particularly regarding the role of that negatively imprinted emotional patterns play upon the quality of our daily felt experiences. He began adopting a behavioral posture he now calls conscious emotional response, which is an approach to life rooted in embracing absolute personal emotional responsibility for all uncomfortable and comfortable felt experience. And through repeated application of conscious emotional response as opposed to unconscious emotional reaction, Michael completely transformed the quality of his experience and found the resulting present moment awareness. So he presented what he found in a methodical pathway into present moment awareness that you can do in only 10 weeks, and that was the topic of his first book, The Presence Process. And his second book, Alchemy of the Heart, mentally prepares the reader for the direct emotional experience and entered into the presence process. But today I'm talking with him about his third book, and we've been privileged to talk with him about all of these ideas. This is your third or fourth time on the show, Michael, I believe. So I'm talking with him about his third book being published in October 2016 called Cattails for Marietta, through which he illustrates present moment awareness in life with people and with cats. So Michael Brown, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you very much. I was actually trying to figure out when last we spoke, Eileen, and I think it must be almost 10 years ago that we last chatted.
Wow, you think it was that long? Well, I know your idea that we talked about that struck me so greatly. Two things from that conversation. You call intimacy into me and see, and that you express that all intimacy that we experience is essentially practice for intimacy with God, and that we have to really clean up our act, because if we try to be intimate with God when we've got hang-ups and blockages, we'll just essentially self-destruct.
Yes, I don't remember the conversation we had. It was so long time ago. But yes, at that time, I was very much focusing on the intimacy journey, and I haven't given it too much thought since then. I know that intimacy with myself and with what I really am is the most profound journey to take. And my capacity to accomplish that is reflected every day in my relationships with everything in my human experience, whether it's
That's
people,
so
animals,
cool.
or plants. Yeah.
yes. Well, we could talk for several weeks on this, so I'm not going there. I'd like to, but I'm going to stop myself. Because now you've written a charming story of relating to Marietta van Weeks. Is that how you say her name?
Van Weeck.
Van Weeck.
Marietta van Weeck would be how it's pronounced. Yeah.
which is Dutch, right?
It's Afrikaans, but it has Dutch descent Afrikaans. Because many of the Afrikaners came here through the Dutch from Holland. So yes.
Right. So Marietta is dying of cancer in the hospital, and in your book, and she has a love for cats, but she's never had them really be a part of her life. And so this book is about you connecting with her through sharing tea and cookies and talking about the cats that have been a part of your life. How did you come up with this construct? How did you come up with the construct?
Well, since I've been 14 years old, I've had profound encounters with cats specifically that have been life-changing. And I made a mental note of those encounters as I went through my life. And then in about 2013, towards the end of 2012 or 2013, I decided that I ought to write down all those encounters before one day I'm going to forget them, and they had all been a very important part of my life. So I spent quite a few months just writing down all of those encounters in a chronological order. And then I left it again for quite a few months. And then one day while I was in my garden, I just saw how to communicate these stories, which was to create a fictitious circumstance in which I could actually tell these stories to somebody. And so I just started on that journey, and then it took on a life of its own, as writing does if you get into it, yeah.
Yeah. So as we were talking right before the show, Mariette is a fictional character, and you were saying she's a compilation of people. Tell us a little bit about Mariette and how she came to into being.
Marietta is a combination of two people. One is a staff sergeant who took care of me when I was in the military. And for me, being in the Army, we had compulsory 2 years of national service when the National Party, the apartheid government, was still here. So we either had to go from school directly to the Army or to university and then to the Army. When I was in the Army, I was taken care of in such a beautiful way by Staff Sergeant Slubbers. And so her personality is pretty much there. And also someone that I met here in Aberdeen and have encountered and have become good friends with also makes a part of that personality.
Wow, very interesting. In your other books, you've talked about how to work with yourself. You got started in all of this by your description because of the condition that gave you terrible headaches.
And
I had the idea. Now, you may not have had this in mind, but having read all of your work, these three works, I like. Say the first one was talking about here's how you can heal yourself, here's how you work with your heart, that's the second one, and now here's how you apply it in everyday life. That's the way it came across to me, and this applying it in every life with Marietta was very gentle and sweet.
Yes, and not only that, but in the relationship with the cats, you see. And so my intention at the time that I spoke to you was that my third book be a book on intimacy. And that since then I wrote two books on intimacy, both of which I did not want to publish. So that book never came about. And then this book came about, and it was very interesting that once my publisher agreed to publish it, she sent me an email and said, this is the book on intimacy that you wanted to write. It didn't come
yes.
out the way you thought you were going to do it. And the book really is not only intimacy with this person, Mariette, in a very difficult circumstance, but it's also intimacy with the beings around us, which in my case are the cats. And also the people around the cats, you know, that were drawn to me through the cats, my intimacy with them. And And in the story, as one goes along, one sees, again, it's really about me coming to terms with things inside myself. Again, it's that intimacy with myself that I'm responding to.
Yes. And you offer that intimacy. I'm glad to hear that, because that's the way it struck me, too. Your intimacy, you almost handle in an offhand way with the cats. You know what has happened to them. You know what they're communicating. You feel their loss or sadness. It's so so integrated that it's hardly obvious. You go, so he knew what the cat was, you know. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Well, that's been the peculiar relationship I've had with cats, is cats have always showed me that life is far more mysterious than we see it in our everyday mundane awareness. And the cats have consistently demonstrated that. And although it may appear offhand, the cats have been the closer to me than human beings for most of my life. And even since this book was finished, two of the cats that starred in that book left, and both their departures were definitely very challenging to me, and really got me to again address my relationship with death and what that means to me, and all sorts of things that came up as absolute gifts from them. And in fact, the book ends with one of those stories, and that too came as a gift from that particular cat. I had a cat that, for 12 years, whenever I was writing, she was always sitting there watching every word being written, paying attention, overseeing everything. And in a way, I felt that this book came from her.
Hmm. How sweet. Well, you do say in your book, there's a quote, "Cats, as we've already discussed, are born facilitators." I love this quote. "Because they do nothing, and yet we feel deeply moved by them."
Absolutely.
I love that quote. Yeah. Well,
they demonstrate being without doing. They can demonstrate being so beautifully.
Yes. Well,
being as
you know,
a bird.
Yes, being. As a child, I was around dogs and cats, and I loved cats. And when I grew up, I got married at a very early age, and the first thing that happened is some cats showed up. And after a while, I had cats in my life continuously, and I came to the conclusion I didn't like them that. And I was participating in a spiritualist church, and the man who was head of the church one day said to me, "Well, you may not like them, but they obviously like you."
Yes.
And they've been with me ever since. I just gave one away because I'm moving. I gave one to my daughter to take care of, but I still have one with me. And cats are really wonderful, I agree. And also, each of the cat stories you offer in Cat Tales for Mariette reveals a learning. Simram, for example, would you tell us his story and tell us what you learned from him?
From Simran, yes, Simran was a profound cat, and he's one of the cats that I cannot recall where Simran came from. I know where all my other cats came from, but for some reason, Simran's arrival in my life remains a mystery. And Simran came into my life when I was living in a place called Sophia Town, and I was busy writing, or around the time I was writing, the Presence Process. And Simran was a cat saint, one could think of it, because he was a male cat, and he wandered around the neighborhood, and all the males loved him and the females loved him. And he used to arrive back at the house with a couple of guests, and they used to eat, and then they used to depart. And so he had a little following. And he also used to know exactly when to cheer me up. And also his departure was also most mysterious, because He knew that entire area better than me, or you know, and yet he got run over, which was just a strange thing to have happened to him, being as wise as he was. And he was only around for a couple of years, so I never got to see him completely grow up. But I do tell the story in the book of how I was watching television at the time that he got hit by a car, and I knew that it was him being hit by the car, and I actually stayed in that chair for probably over an hour before I went out, because I knew there was nothing, and I actually didn't want to you know, have it be over quite yet. With the passing of cats around me, I've often known at the moment of their passing, even if I didn't know the cat very well, I've just known that something happened, and that was it. I've felt their passing. And so that has always been, again, showing me the mystery of being alive.
So, you know, as you're talking, I realize I follow up on your statement that since the age of 14, you've had profound encounters. What was the profound encounter from age 14? Is that one in the book?
Well, the profound encounter was that I grew up in a home where my stepfather was a dog breeder, and he bred both hunting dogs and show dogs, and his great desire was to breed a dog that would be a champion hunter in the field, a field dog, and a champion dog in the show ring, which he managed to accomplish. But it meant that we always had at least, you know, 8 or 12 dogs, a couple of them with litters. And of course, in that environment, I was never exposed to cats. Never encountered cats. And one day I was wondering, we lived on a wine farm outside Stellenbosch in a place called Kulinov, which was a wonderful place to grow and explore. And one day I was just exploring in the bushes between the vines and things, and I came across a litter of wild cats, and that was my first encounter with cats. And it was life-changing, because I went back there every moment I could. And eventually I tell the story there of how the mother disappears and leaves the kittens, and then, of course, I rescue the kittens and can't keep them. But it showed me that I was a cat lover, not a dog lover, which was very evident, because even though I was 14 years old and had grown up with all these dogs, never had one of them been my dog. Whereas, you know, my brother had his dog, and my sister had her dog, and my mother would have her dog, and my father would favor that dog. But for me, they were all just dogs. I loved them, and I got on with them, and I love dogs. But I never ever had a dog. I never ever wanted to have my dog. You know what I'm saying? Never happened.
Well, we're up to our first break right now. One of the things I'd like to talk with you about when we come back is, you know, I've had several cats. In fact, the two that I've been living with most recently are both foundlings. Many, many of the cats I've had have come to me like yours did. And it's always very special when they bond with you. And I want to talk with you about the bonding between you and cat, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Sounds good. So Michael Brown, author of Cat Tales for Mariette, is my guest today, and we're going to be talking more with Michael about cats and maybe how they help us come into alignment with conscious emotional awareness. And that's coming up next on Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
Know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
All right, welcome back on Full Power Living. Call in now to talk with author and consciousness leader Michael Brown. Our number is 888-498-0570. So I have a couple of announcements. Upcoming on Full Power Living, we're going to be exploring how to maintain your relationship with your tech-savvy kids. That's when I talk with Deborah Heitner about raising digital natives. Next Thursday, Aura Nidich is talking about the power of one simple question in our personal growth and evolution. And we want to tell you about the many wonderful upcoming radio shows we have for you. So click subscribe on our homepage at emotionalpro.com. Subscribe and encourage your friends and family to listen. Also, be sure to tune in next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, which is noon Eastern time, for my conversation with Aura Nidich. Today, I'm talking with Michael Brown, who's author of three powerful books, the latest of which is Cat Tales for Mariette. And Michael, before we took the break, I wanted to ask you to consider talking with us about the bond. Like, one of the cat that I have living with me now actually lived for 2 or 3 years under the house across the street from where I live, and I slowly persuaded her to come and live with us, and she's about 20 years old now, and she's the sweetest cat, and she's very loyal, and she's just opened up, and I felt so special as she allowed us to bond together. From my perspective, one of the things that happens is that dogs are much more interdependent, let's say, sometimes dependent, and they look for ways to attach with you. Cats, in my experience, look for you to attach to them, for you to give them what they're looking for. I want you to talk about that bond.
We tend to train dogs, but cats tend to train us.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And, you know, yeah. I think we have this wonderful relationship with our pets, especially because many of us live guarded lives. And so it's a way for us to have an experience of love and closeness and intimacy, often in a world where we don't feel safe enough to do that. So it's a beautiful capacity that both cats and dogs give us.
Yes.
And I think often that's why when we experience the departure of a dog or a cat, it can sometimes move us more profoundly than maybe a departure of a member of our family. And we can be surprised at that, but that's because we can let them in much deeper into our, you know, our heart place.
Yes.
And also our relationship with them is not so dependent on words and thinking and understanding and arrangements, and it's got to be more innocent than that. And that means something to us, to be able to have that innocent, more direct, pure relationship with life.
Oh, that's a lovely way of looking at it. Well, and it segues in well with what I want to talk with you about next. Throughout your book, you share how the cats you're discussing work with emotions. The cat Misty, for example, who actually belonged to neighbors, died unexpectedly of kidney failure. And she had been coming to a room in which you'd been releasing your own angry feelings, and it wasn't totally clear, but you certainly left the suggestion that the cat may have absorbed some of that. And then there's Mr. Jack, who reacted to being taken to the pound where he was bound to be euthanized. And he reacted by escaping and running off to what they called cat heaven there. And you were feeling really good at the outcome.
Yeah.
And so the cats bring up emotions. And you talk about this in your chapter called Anger Kills. Talk to me about what you learned about emotions through cats.
Well, I'm very sensitive now about how I am, not only around people, but around cats, because cats are very receptive to what we're going through, and they almost embrace it. In fact, my vet says, as soon as he says that the difference between a vet and a doctor is that normally a doctor only has one patient in front of him, but a vet always has two. And he's got, you know, the vet has the animal and the owner.
Right.
And if the animal's having problems, it's usually because it's reflecting the owner. And my vet says he doesn't tell that to many people because they don't get it. But if they bring in a dog that's suffering from stress, he tries to talk to the owner about their own stress levels. And so it is interesting how the animals reflect this so accurately. And with that particular chapter, I don't know whether my anger is what caused that cat to pass away. I just recounted the events that I experienced of that. And, you know, I also just lost a cat recently that that was Presence, who has been with me since the beginning.
Oh, yes.
It was the most strangest event because my sister came to visit us from Ireland, and she was staying at my mother's house, who's also in this town. And one morning she came over to see my garden and my home, and she sat with Presence, and she took a picture of Presence. Now, she doesn't really like cats, but she kind of liked Presence. And she took a picture of Presence, and then she was staying here for a week. So that was on the Monday. On the Friday, she was going through her stuff, and she sent me the picture. And I looked at the picture, and I looked at Presence, and there were two different cats.
Oh, my goodness.
And Presence looked like she was like 2 kilograms heavier. She just looked like a big, huge cat. And over the next 3 days, she swelled up even more. So I rushed her into the vet, and he started treating her for diabetes or something. He looked at that side of it, and he gave me a treatment for her. And I gave her that treatment for a week, but after a week, I could see that she was leaving. I mean, really, really fast. And so I took her in again, and that day that I took her in, when I took her in, you know, he euthanized her, and she had no liver, almost no kidney. He did a scan and showed me, and she was riddled with cancer from top to bottom. And
oh my goodness.
That was less than, you know, it was a week. It was literally 3 weeks from any sign of it to when she was unable to jump up or literally unable to move anymore.
Right.
And so that was just profound for me to go through that and see that. And one questions, you know, where did that come from? And what was taken away?
One of the things that has always that I've thought, I've been an animal lover. I wanted to be a veterinarian when I was a teenager. In fact, I've always loved animals and had them in my adult life. And to notice that animals, cats as well as dogs, they don't actually show illness. They keep on functioning pretty much until they fall over. And it seems like a lesson on how to die And also a lesson on the fact that once you decide you're going to die, that's what you're doing.
And they may not identify with their chemical body the way we do. And so when we identify with our body, we're going to tend to suffer more in the same situation that they're going through.
Right.
Because we're so identified with it. And I noticed that too, that it became very clear to me that presence was staying for me.
Yes.
Because I was wanting to heal her. I was wanting her to get better. And she was really staying. And on the night that I really got that, you know, I said, I will only take her into for euthanasia when the suffering starts. But the suffering had been going on for 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
And I was the one not – and actually my vet told me that when I first brought her in, if he had had his way, he would have euthanized her on the spot.
But he knew
I wouldn't have been able to deal with it.
Wow.
I actually had to go home and deal with the fact that this cat was leaving. And when I could deal with it, I brought her back in. It's almost like the cat was just going, okay, whatever you need to do, I'm here with you. You know what I mean?
Yes,
Which is the profound experience one has. And
So you remind me, I had a sister who wasn't partial to animals either. And in 2004, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and we invited her to come stay in our home where we have a lot of animals. And we knew that she didn't like animals, so I put a child gate across the door to her room to keep them out. And we had one cat named Puck who was totally interested in helping my sister to heal. And she would jump over that fence and get up on my sister's bed, and we would find out because my sister would call from her room, would somebody please come get this effing cat out of my room? And we knew that Puck was trying her best to help my sister. And she never gave up. She just kept coming back.
I want to share with you my story because I too wanted to be a veterinarian. My stepfather said, before you go and study such a thing, you ought to go and work as with a veterinarian. So he booked me in for a day to go and work with the vet that looked after all our dogs. And in the morning we did artificial insemination, with extracting semen from bulls and doing artificial insemination afterwards.
Oh my goodness!
Which was one of the most terrifying things.
I've seen movies of that.
In the afternoon, we had to put down three dogs of people that were leaving the country and or going overseas on a trip, and they didn't want anyone to look after their dogs while they were gone. And that really, really upset me. And I said to the vet, does this happen often? He says, all the time. And I said, I'm not going to do this job.
Oh.
Bulls in the morning and murder in the afternoon. I'm not interested.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was that.
I think writing books is better. And we talked about this before too, but I just wanted when you went looking at the shelter, a cat that they had called Dusty came to you and insisted that that she come home with you. You said she's everything I'm not looking for, and your friend Ingrid said that may be true, but you are everything she is looking for, and. Thereby, you got persuaded, and you brought her home and renamed her Harmony. And I said to myself, well, what lessons was Harmony teaching you? She was teaching, for me, she was teaching about trusting our gut, about speaking up for what we want, and about totally trusting what feels right to us.
Yes. She was a profound presence, but she eventually got called Botchy. So she went from being Dusty to Harmony and to Botchy. And the reason I called her Botchy is because she wasn't really a cat. She was just disguised as a cat. And I knew she was her own species completely. And the beautiful thing about Bocce is, you know, when Bocce passed, which is written about at the end of the book,
right?
You know, she appeared to me twice after her passing, and she appeared to my mother, who is not a cat person at all, but just adored Bocce. And so to have her appear on my mother's bed in the early hours of the morning was just marvelous. Although at the time, she couldn't tell me about it because I was still too upset because of the way Bocce passed, which, you know, I'll leave that for the book.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you do, in your chapter, Anger Kills, talk with Mariette about your own work with anger.
Yes.
I think you were in the United States and you discovered that you being a nice person was just a mask covering up
yes.
a very angry person.
Yes.
And you soundproofed a room and allowed yourself to scream and shout there. And by
yes.
sharing that with Mariette, she got into contact with her own anger, too, about a very powerful negative experience that she had at the age of
yes.
13.
Yes. Well, you see, anger is very particular, is a very particular experience. Not, it is unlike fear and it is unlike grief, because we are allowed to be afraid and we are allowed to be in grief, but we are not allowed to be angry. And if one wants to test this theory, go into an airport, and in an airport you can be afraid and nothing will happen to you. You may become medicated, and you can also be in a state of grief and nothing will happen to you, bad will happen to you, you'll just get medicated. But if you're angry in an airport, it's likely you will leave there alive. So that is the nature of anger in the world, is where we're not allowed to express our anger. You know, they say act your age, but actually we should act our rage. Many of us have so much inbuilt energy from not being able to say yes when we want to say yes, or no when we want to say no. Or, you know, just going through life, especially trying to be, and I blame religions for this, because religions tend to force us to be nice people when we're not. We're both. We're nice and nasty people. We're made up of both. But if one only forces the niceness, then there's something that builds up and builds up and builds up, and it can eventually come out as terrible anger and rage.
Yes.
It's a very challenging thing to deal with, and I'm sure is the cause of much physical suffering in the world today, as far as symptomatic suffering is coming from unexpressed or unresolved anger and rage. And in that cupboard experience where I was shouting, that's called release work. That's before
mm-hmm.
I discovered what resolution work was, which was not to shout it out, but actually to contain it within, so that it could go through the process of integration. So that was interesting, discovering it and screaming and shouting my head off in a cupboard every
yes.
day, so that I wouldn't do it to the people in the restaurant where I was working.
I had a friend who bought a house once. He was a psychologist, and it had a large built-in safe in the basement, and that's where he padded that room and got his anger out that way too. And that's another commonality. Of course, that may be a commonality with lots of people, but I consider myself a recovered angry person. That was the absolute most evident emotion that I had coming out of my childhood. So we're up to our second break. Michael Brown is my guest today. We're talking about how the cats, who've been part of Michael's life, brought insight, healing, and resolution to him and his friend Mariette in the book, as she was lying in the hospital dying of cancer. You're listening to Full Power Living.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Michael Brown regarding stories from his latest book, Cat Tales for Mariette, which is a very simple and heartfelt, in a very simple and heartfelt way, helps Michael, Mariette, and all of us to grow and evolve. So, Michael, when you revealed your anger and your work with anger to Mariette, it allowed her to share something that I'd never heard before, but I really think it's a profound statement, that her husband called her the angriest person he knew who never got angry. That's quite a statement, but a lot of us do that. When we hold anger inside of us, it tends to grow. And when it grows, there are five ways that anger processes through us, and one of them is that anger lays the groundwork for us to get ill. And as Michael points out so well in his book, held on too long enough, anger can kill. And Mariette in the hospital says, "I'm really starting to think that that's why I'm here in this hospital, because I never shouted enough."
Well, you know, one of the things that is, you see, when people go into emotional integration work, they sometimes think this means they'll never be angry again. But anger is very healthy, and sometimes the correct response in a situation is anger. Sometimes one can also be angry and not be angry. For example, if a male cat comes into my house and sprays, I will act angry towards the male cat, but I'm actually not really angry about it. But the male cat thinks I'm angry because of my behavior. But I wouldn't have been able to be like that if I had not worked with my anger. If I had not worked with my anger, I would be angry and really losing my temper. And, you know, then that's unhealthy. So it's also interesting that, you know, even in a small town like this that I'm living in, where we have 1,500 people maybe in the town, there's a lot of people here that are very nice people, and they've never been angry, or they've never been able to express themselves, just like Mariette. And so sometimes in pubs you have to model someone standing up for themselves or expressing their opinion or whatever, whereas what it would not normally happen. And, for example, I feel like I've done that for my mother. I've shown my mother it's actually healthy for her to get angry. And so she will be able to now speak her mind when she needs to speak her mind and not bottle it up and eventually end up having sleepless nights and all the things that happen when people can't express their emotions. But anger is a very, very difficult one, because we sometimes feel that if I do let all my anger out, then I'm going to destroy everything. And so we are afraid of our own anger.
Yes, and as a person who had a lot of anger, I had a very challenging childhood and I had a lot of anger. When I finally allowed myself to release some of what I had, release what I had stored up, it took me 2 years of being angry before I got to the end of it. And I think one thing is that there is an end to it if you look at anger or any emotion as energy. When you block it, then you store the energy, and you've got to let the energy run out. But the energy does have a run out point. But like you say, it never stops trickling, never stops moving. It just doesn't have the buildup that it used to have.
Yes, and it's not destructive. One can contain one's anger. The more one expresses it or consciously expresses it, initially that's what we do. We need to release it and then learn to consciously contain it and then learn to address those things that are making us angry, not necessarily at the time we're angry, but once we've been able to digest it a bit, to still be able to speak our truth in situations. And these days, the only thing that really angers me is if I betray myself, or I leave myself behind, or I'm kidding myself or whatever. If I'm doing, that's what makes me angry now. If I do something for somebody when I really don't want to and I'm feeling manipulated and I still go and do it, then I'll get angry with myself. It may look initially like I'm angry with that person, but it's, in the end, it's always me I'm angry at, because I'm not standing up for myself, or I'm not, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. So I think I'm a few years older than you, so I'll tell you the next step is to have compassion for yourself, Michael.
Oh, I do.
So we don't actually have to go back to specific incidents in our past and heal each one. Like you're saying, the big issue is that we need to unblock our emotions and allow them to move through us and allow ourselves to be human and have emotions and share the emotions, go through them and move on to other things. Is that accurate for how you think about it?
Well, there's no necessity at all to enter the past, or there is no past. The past is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. But whatever is unresolved will always find a way to show itself in the moment,
yes,
often as that which upsets us. And when we get upset, there are usually three things going on simultaneously, and our attention is usually stuck to one level. So on a physical level, there will be an event, circumstance, an activity, whatever that seemed to upset us, or a person, a physical thing. And we may be focused on that. Then on another level, there's a story we're telling ourselves about why we're upset, or why we have the right to be upset, or why we're right.
Right. I know I am.
Yes, I'm always right. And then, underlying the story, there's going to be a felt experience of the upset. The felt experience may be in our body as a physical sensation. It may be around our body as just a feeling of uncomfortable, warm energy. It may be just something we can feel but can't locate. It may be in our gut. What I discovered was that to bypass the physical event and the story and go straight to the felt experience and to allow that to be there, the felt experience is the memory of the unresolved event. It's the direct connection we have with the memory. And allowing that feeling to be there, that's, you talk about the compassion. For me, compassion means come, pass on. You can come to me, I will be with you, and I will let you pass on without entering fear about what's going on with you. But that compassion is also wielded on myself. So when I feel something, I'm upset, I must also allow that feeling to come to me, that I may be with it unconditionally until it passes on, however long it chooses to take. At that point, I can address the situation verbally if I want to, because I'll do so from a point of response and not reaction. And I won't put people on guard or make people offensive if I'm talking to them about what happened. In fact, I will draw them in towards me and become more intimate with them if I can speak to them from a place of response. But I can't speak from that place of response if I'm still living in a memory, in that felt experience, and acting out of that memory. Mm-hmm. And that is really the absolute simplicity of what the presence process became, of how to activate, you know, how to access that memory, that emotional felt memory.
Wow. That's a very nice, concise way of expressing it. Thank you. So, one other question. Marriott concludes, quote, "I would like to see those pictures of Presence and Big Guy and Chubbus, Choppus and Bocce. I feel I know them now. I feel I have a whole life with your mini cats. Thank you for the stories, Michael. I can really say I feel like a cat person now." Beautiful. And when I read that, the question that was in my mind is one of your messages that by telling each other our stories, we can enrich one another and help each other in the growing process?
We deeply enrich ourselves by telling each other our stories, because it enables us to hear, you know, to verbalize. As long as our stories are not dramas, you know, telling each other our dramas or a reactionary stories, that's not helpful. But telling each other our stories when asked and in the right, you know, in the moment, when the moment, like this book, I never set out to write The Presence Process. I never set out to write Alchemy of the Heart as a book. And I never set out to write Cat's Tales of Mariette as a book. I just sat down. Process was written firstly as documents given to people I was facilitating so they had stuff to take home with them. And that became a book. And Alchemy of the Heart was written to capture the presentations that I was giving on Presence Process, because I knew one day I wouldn't give them anymore and I would lose this presentation that had evolved, a beautiful way of explaining the work. So I wrote that down, and I was going to give that away free on my website, but my publisher read it and they said, please, let's publish it. And then Cat Tales for Mariette, I also wrote that down initially because I didn't want to lose those memories of those stories, and eventually it worked itself into a book. So I didn't set out and go, no, I need to share this with people. I'm glad it worked out that way, but it wasn't what I set out. I was just following my joy in those moments of this is the next thing to do, this is the next thing to do. And if our joy leads us to sharing our experiences with other people, there's always benefits, especially for ourselves and for those, because it gives confirmation to others. Because on a very deep level, I would say we're all having their exact same experience. We're just perceiving it from our own point of view. So when I speak to someone else from within my experience, not from within something someone else told me, but from within my direct experience, when I speak to someone from that place, I'm actually speaking to them from within them too. And that's why they can relate. But if I speak to someone from within someone else's experience, it might sound interesting, but it won't resonate as being something that the person may find as a confirmation or relate to.
Thank you. I want you to keep on writing, and I want you who are listening to understand that Michael's publisher that he's been talking about is Constance Kellogg, and the Namaste, N-A-M-A-S-T-E, which was originally formed to publish Eckhart Tolle's book. So you have had some wonderful guidance and support with your writings too, and it's understandable. I love your messages and your willingness to play with words and the evidence that you show us of the power of your own beingness, the cats that are, as you say, swimming in your heart. So, Michael, thank you for Cat Tales for Mariette. It's such a gentle way to find our deeper selves. And also, please keep writing, keep coming back to talk with us, and thank you for being with us here today on Full Power Living.
It's been wonderful, and thank you for giving Cat Tales for Mariette its first life on the airways.
Oh, wow. At first. That's first. Great. Thank you. Thank you. And for talking with us all the way from South Africa. That's great, too. It's amazing what we can do now with computers. So thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
So welcome.
Next week, listen to Full Power Living when I talk with Aura Nijic about Who Says? The One Question Power Tool for Growth and Enlightenment. I look forward to having you with us next Thursday. Tell your friends and family about us and our shows, and thank you for listening. Full Power Living's producer is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, and for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.